This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to the Spirit Lounge here on Joy 94.9 every Thursday from 8 until 9. My name is Tal Meritz and I am joined by my lovely co-host Rachel. Hello.
Hi, Tal.
We will have a great show tonight. Later on, we'll be talking to Sam. We'll be talking a little bit about a few different things, about coming out, you know, a bit of a personal story. It's something that I've been doing a bit less on the Spirit Lounge, but it's still very, very important to do. And, you know, church shopping is another thing. I think you did that a bit as well, didn't you?
I did, quite a bit.
For those that are a bit like, what does that mean? For the sake of it, church shopping is, you know, when someone's a bit like, I don't know where I'm going in terms of, you know, maybe because they've moved or because they've come out and they now want to still find a church.
Yeah, and try everything on and see if anything fits.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll be talking about that a bit later. But first, we'll be covering our holy days of the week. We have a few,
actually. Yeah, Tal, have you managed to get a sound clip for our holy days of the week yet?
I still need my theme song. I'll work on that.
Hang on.
We'll do one for now. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba. Holy day of the week. Okay.
Yeah.
So, this first one that we actually have is Buddha's birthday. It's known as Hanamatsuri. I was actually hearing about this just the other day. But yeah, this is coming up. Very exciting, of course. Do you want to tell us a bit more about it, Rachel? You were the one mostly looking it up.
Definitely. So Hanamatsuri is celebrated on April the 8th with a flower festival. And it used to be called Kanbutsui. So on this day, small buildings are decorated with flowers and buildings decorated with flowers are made at temples and a baby Buddha is put inside. So this particular festival is celebrated through a lot of countries, but it does happen on different days depending. So this is, you know, particularly Japan that celebrates this particular way with the flower festival. And so it's said that Buddha was born approximately 2,500 years ago under the Bodhi tree in the garden of Lumbini in Nepal to the Sakya king Sudhonhana and his queen Maya. When the child was born, flowers bloomed, birds sung, and sweet rain fell from the heavens above. The infant Buddha took 7 steps in the 4 directions, and with one hand raised to the sky and the other pointed downwards, he proclaimed, "Whether above the sky or below the sky, I am the most noble and high. I am here to bring peace to all the sentient beings in the world who are suffering." So
that is much more impressive than what I did as a child.
Yeah.
I just cried.
Yeah, well, you are not a god.
Yeah, or a first enlightened one or anything of the kind. Well, it's actually interesting. Just a few weeks ago, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we talked about Nirvana Day.
Yes.
So they're quite close together. So you have Parinirvana Day or Nirvana Day, which is when the Buddha died and achieved enlightenment. And then just two, 3 weeks later, we're talking about Buddha's birthday.
Yeah.
It's tougher. It's funny how sometimes just because of the way we count a year, like this is the spot where we're like, how can he be born after he dies?
But yes.
Like, it doesn't quite work that way.
But there were many years in between.
There were some in-betweens. Interesting. Well, do we see, I mean, that was mostly in Japan that they had the flowers in that. Do we sort of see other things in other countries?
Yes. Yeah, so in Nepal, which is considered the birth country of Buddha, It is celebrated on the full moon day of the Vaisakha month. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but we'll give it a go, which is based on the Hindu calendar. And in other countries that follow the Buddhist calendar, it falls upon the full moon, which is typically the fifth or sixth lunar month. In China and Korea, it's celebrated eighth day of the fourth month, so the same as in Japan. Based on the Chinese lunar calendar.
Where it moves around a bit depending on what country you are, the calendar changes.
Yeah, and
it's super tough.
It's a bit like for the Greeks
with Easter right now.
Very true.
You know, different calendar, different day, same holiday.
So if it's a leap year, though, it could be celebrated in June. I couldn't quite get to the bottom of why that affects it.
It depends, I guess, on the type of leap year. Maybe it could be that with some calendars, there's a whole month put in for a leap year rather than just a day, the way ours works. So it could be that it moves because of that sort of thing.
Based on the Buddhist calendar and or the Hindu calendar.
And it's worth noting that there's going to be a weekend-long festival coming up in Melbourne. It's like Buddha's Day and part of the Multicultural Festival, and it's in Fed Square. So you've got to go look that up, maybe get down to Buddha Day. As part of all of the stuff that's going on there. Yeah, I know.
That'd be very exciting. It's celebrated all over Australia, so we're lucky to have some of that in Melbourne here.
If you're listening and you are not on our Facebook page, please stop what you are doing, unless you are driving, and go look up the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. That is literally what the name is. And go join us up, join with the group. It would be nice to see more of you there, because I know that there's a lot of listeners out there who are not joining up, and we want to be able to contact and stay in touch with you a little bit better.
We want you to tell us what you want to hear as well.
Yes, that's right. Now, the other holy day I think we do want to talk about is Vaisakhi or Vaisakhi, like it depends on the pronunciation.
Yeah.
And it's from the Punjab region, so that's some of those regions that are sort of up northern India, close to Pakistan, and sometimes some of it is actually, I believe some of it is actually within Pakistan.
And it coincides with the Tamil New Year, so that's why this one's relevant.
Yeah, and so it's celebrated, I think, by quite a few, like Buddhists celebrate it, Hindus celebrate it, but it's a major festival for Sikhs as well. For those, I'll quickly note, for those of you that don't really know what Sikhs are, most likely if you've seen a person walking around with a turban and you've looked at them and assumed that they were Hindu, or you assumed that they were Muslim, you would be wrong on both counts. They are neither Hindus or Muslims. They are Sikhs. Sikhs are another religion that is from that region, and it's from specifically the Punjab region. And it's actually, I will note, it's quite interesting. Its texts are made up of both Hindu texts and Islamic texts. It's got a combination of both of them, which is quite a rare thing for a religion to be made up of two different religions that don't share a history.
There you go.
I don't know how else to put it, but it really is like, imagine there was a religion that was, you know, it had the New Testament. It was made up of the New Testament and then just something, just of a completely different background of like Confucianism in China, and you just go, oh, okay, they are a combination. Now, it's because, of course, that they're within that same area. So there are major holidays going on for them, and this is, it's all part of the Tamil New Year and a few other things like that. It's very exciting.
It's especially important for the Sikhs as it marks the establishment of the Khalsa. So it's celebrated around the world by the Sikh diaspora.
So diaspora.
That's diaspora.
So we'll say for those that are celebrating, we'll say to have a good Vaisakhi. I believe I'm pronouncing that. And the other one is Hanumatsuri. That's the first one, Buddha's birthday. Tonight we are joined by Sam Burmeister, as he's sometimes accidentally called, but it is not. It's Burmeister. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. How are you, Tal?
You don't like Burmeister? Esther, no?
No comment.
No comment. Well, Sam's a good friend of mine. He's come on the show today. mainly to talk a little bit about your background, bit of storytelling time. It's something that we do like to do on the Spirit Lounge. And I must admit, I have neglected doing that a little. I am quite the one for some of the slightly more academic, theoretical, theological discussions and things like that.
It has been very educational lately.
It's been very educational, but I need to put the spirit back into the Spirit Lounge. I've been putting much too much lounge in there. So hello, Sam, welcome to the show. And I guess we wanted to start, maybe you could tell us just a little bit about your religious background.
Okay, no worries. So my religious background is Christian. So I grew up in a very Christian family, your stereotypical Christian mum and dad who met through a church program and both converted to Christianity. I was raised through private Christian school here in Victoria. We had communion as a family. I went to church several times a week. I ran the worship team when I was in school. I was part of the church worship team, the youth group. It's pretty much going to church 4 to 5 times a week.
So that's actually quite interesting. Both your parents converted to Christianity.
That's correct. From non-Christian backgrounds.
Okay, they were just from unaffiliated backgrounds?
My mum was from a Catholic background. Dad was from a non-religious background.
Okay, and so what is this actual denomination that they ended up becoming a part of and that you grew up as?
Originally it was Anglican, but a progressive Anglican, so similar to a Baptist church with a bit more of the Catholic influence with their reading things. And then we went on to a more progressive church, so now known as ACCC, previously known as AOG. So your typical Pentecostal Hillsong Planet Shakers style church.
I see. So you moved on to some of those. We've done quite a few shows on those type of ones, wanted to listen back on those. And you were quite involved, as you were saying.
Yeah, definitely. Threw myself in headfirst, so that was my life at the time.
Yeah. How old are we talking about here?
So how old was I when I started my involvement with
everything? I mean, obviously you were kind of always involved, but...
I started probably into actual leadership and the worship teams and things like that probably when I was about 16 and all the way through till about 22.
Could you tell us what is it? Maybe it's just because I'm not from a Christian background, but I'm not sure what a worship team is.
Yeah, sure. So worship teams, a lot of people ask that question and I just assume they know what I'm referring
to. Okay,
so
it's not just me.
So don't worry, you're going to learn. Basically, when people think of a church and music, they think of the good old holy choirs and the old school hymns, but the church I was in was nothing like that. So think your modern kind of rock band, but singing a mixture of slow and upbeat songs, two of each generally, and you meet as a band and you rehearse, and I did singing, piano, and I did a bit of the media side of it as well.
It's literally like having a garage band, but they actually have much better equipment.
Yeah, they are. Okay, wow. I mean, I've definitely heard some of that more Pentecostal-style music, and I must admit, it is pretty good.
It's very catchy, and that's, what draws people in, isn't it?
Exactly, and Hillsong, to give you some bit of trivia, Hillsong is every year the highest-selling religious city in the world, and all over the world Australia leads in Christian music, and they opened up a Hillsong church in London, which is an offshoot America, so Australia leads the way in terms of modern Christian music. It's actually some amazing musicians there. Wow. That you've probably heard on the radio, like Brooke Fraser, for example, is actually part of Hillsong.
Mm. You yourself actually do music, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So last year I finished a Bachelor of Music, and I'm a singer and songwriter, so the experiences at the church were a good start for learning everything I know now and getting a safe entrance into performance.
So when you were at the church and you were very much a part of the music team and the leadership team and everything, did you ever see yourself not being in that position?
No, that was my life. I literally lived for that. I lived and breathed it. I was best friends with the worship team leader. I would hang out with these guys. They became like family to me. And I'd spend a lot of time outside of the practice working on the songs and hopefully aiming towards, moving up in the team, which I did over time. So it was everything.
Did you ever invite friends along to church services to listen to your music and stuff?
Yeah, quite a lot. They used to call me, they say I was gifted in outreach because I'd always have a row of people at the church sitting next to me of random non-Christian people that I'd drag along to come.
There were some scare quotes with that outreach. There were the, what do you call it? Yeah, what do you do it when you, with fingers?
Inverted
little quotation inverted marks, finger, yeah, with outreach. Did you then end up attracting people to the church?
Yeah, I'd definitely say I brought
a few
people.
On purpose or by accident? Or?
Well, there's an underlying Christian message of, they say, be fishers of men is what Jesus said. So going out and spreading the good news and basically converting people. But it's more like you can't force a horse to drink, you can only bring it to the water. The same idea, you bring them to church and God does the rest. And so my family were big on that as well, is bringing people in and let the church and God do the rest. And so, yeah, I used to be a firm believer. I'd look at people and think, how can I get them to come along and join this faith that I believe in?
How old were you when you started bringing people to church?
Well, growing up in a Christian school, all of my friends went to church.
Okay.
So it's probably when I was about
it sounds
16.
Like an observant Christian school, it's worth noting as well. Like,
yes.
As in, I went to an Anglican school, but no one in it was Anglican.
Yeah.
Almost literally. But
well,
yes.
To give you an idea of the school, like what you're saying, the interesting point, ours is one of the only 100% closed Christian schools in Australia.
Okay.
So to have a letter from one parent going to church from the pastor.
Wow.
And basically, no one comes out at schools like that. You can legally be expelled from a school like that if you come out. And, everyone there is Christian or at least acts that way because it's almost uncool not to be a Christian in a school like that.
At what point did you realize that that you were maybe not straight? To dance around it a little more, but, you know.
Yeah, very early for me. So I think when I was about 10 years old, actually, I started noticing the differences. And yeah, it was about that point when it started becoming very obvious that I was a bit different to my brothers and my classmates.
At the age of 10, how did you know that it was different? Like, if you were surrounded by, you know, all the kids at the Christian school, like, what particular thing pointed it out for you?
Well, the fact that funny things. So, for example, if my dad or my brothers would point out, oh, she's really hot, I'd think, that's really disrespectful. How dare you say something like that?
A 10-year-old just like, that is sexist.
And I was always the fun kid when I was younger because I did not understand how could you be so rude? But then at the same time, you're looking at these guys thinking, damn, I could totally get
wow.
That's incredible. And at what point did you realize that this was really a thing? And did you always know that this was something that you had to kind of not talk about?
Oh, for sure. I was ridden with guilt since the first moment that I started hating these feelings. So, like, in my family, very, very traditional Christian attitude, even though both my parents were quite progressive in certain ways, they definitely had strong feelings about homosexuality.
And they made that clear?
Yeah, quite clear. And I mean, my mum comes from a sheep farm originally in northern WA, and she moved to Perth after boarding school and then moved to Victoria where she met my dad. So she went through a change, but she still has that background of very traditional Catholic upbringing. And you're not gay. And if you're gay, you're that weird person in the village. You know what I mean? So it was very unacceptable for a man to show feminine traits.
And did anyone know? Did you some point?
Never. I guess when I was a bit older, I had some experiences maybe when I was in my mid-teens, but nothing was ever discussed. And it wasn't probably till I was in about year 9 that it came to light, but at the same time was kept hidden.
In what way did it come to light, or that you had these experiences?
So it's a bit of an interesting story. Basically, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, but as a guy who can't express his sexuality, one unhealthy way that a lot of guys would fulfill that desire would be porn. And so basically from a very early age, I had an addiction to it. And it wasn't till years later.
I'm assuming to gay pornography.
Yes.
Yes. I took a moment. I don't know.
No, to political profiles. No,
I feel really
course.
Dumb now.
Yes. So to homosexual pornography.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know what went through my head from.
And yeah, so one day I was up late at night, as I usually was, on one of the computers, and my dad's an IT professor, so he's pretty savvy, comes along and quickly grabs the mouse and looks at my tabs and says, "What's that?" And opens up. I had probably about 10 tabs open, and one of them is this probably dodgy site with all these flashing banners, and I don't know what was on it. And I just yelled, "Oh, it's a pop-up," and closed it. And next day I wake up and my dad's yelling at the top of his lungs, and I go in there and he's somehow used the antivirus to comb through all the records of websites that I'd looked at that I'd deleted and just started reading them out to me out loud and yelling. My mum's yelling.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, so that was an interesting day, but my brothers just heard yelling. They had no idea what was happening. They were off having breakfast on the other side of the house, and then I was banned from the computer for a year. And
for a year,
wasn't allowed to discuss it with anyone. And I was then that was the stage when I was forced to go to a Christian psychologist.
Okay.
Yes. So at that point, basically, I began sessions with this counselor who basically helped me be straight and talked me through my feelings and my relationship with my father and helped me understand myself a lot better, which was good. But he was very anti-homosexuality as a natural thing or something that could occur through a natural method. To him, it was a result of brokenness and poor relationship with the same-sex parent, which in a lot of cases there are correlations, but it's obviously not directly due to that.
Well, we do know that type of idea and this idea of, you know, saying that we can actually quote unquote cure people, apart from that being offensive in the first place, just doesn't work.
Of course. Right. Exactly right. Though he wasn't trying to cure me as much as lead me back onto the path, because his view was I was having a stage. I was going through a stage and he didn't see me as gay. He said, "You don't walk gay, you don't talk that gay." And basically I just steered him off the topic and
the assumptions. Oh wow.
There was a lot of that. And this guy was a highly trained psychologist, so was interesting.
So did your parents ever actually ask the question, or did they just say, "Oh, we've put two and two together because you watch gay porn, you must be gay"?
No,
so
they didn't think I was gay. They hadn't accepted that. They yelled that at me when they found the sites, and I remember my dad's words saying, "Are you gay?" And I yelled, "No." And my mom said, "Don't be ridiculous. Don't put those words in his head. Of course he's not." And so from that point, it was my mission to bury it. Things got really bad with me and my dad because the counselor was obviously unraveling things and, you know, trying to deal with stuff with relationships. And so I had to confront my dad about some things, and he hated the fact that the counselor would put any responsibility on him. And so at that point, basically, he said, "You can either stop going to the counselor or I'll tell your brothers about what happened."
Oh,
and
wow.
So I was pulled out of the counselling, and that's when we moved interstate. Yeah.
Wow. And so how did you feel about this psychology work? Did you feel like it was going to work, or?
I was desperate for it to work because I was going to bed every night praying that I'd be straight when I woke up. And, you know, you want to fit in with the culture that you're brought up in. And so I hated myself. And so it was good to have the counselor, someone to talk to. Even though I couldn't really be open with him fully, I could deal with other things. And yeah, if I didn't have him, I probably would have been in a much darker place, I'm sure.
Wow. That's a tough position to be in, where you're actually with, I mean, you really probably should have been seeing someone else.
Yes.
And probably seeing it about, I mean, I don't want to do my own suddenly amateur psychology work, but it sounds like you probably needed to talk to someone about, you know, the fact that you're in a position where people are sending you to Christian psychologists.
Yes, talk to another psychologist about the psychologist.
So it was interesting in that respect. And when we moved interstate, went to a big country town known as Wagga Wagga, where I was at a Christian school, but it was a lot more open because not as many people, and suddenly things changed a bit. I had a new start, but I still kept in the closet. I started dating a girl. We dated for year 11 and 12. I ran the worship team. I was fully involved in everything, and there was not one discussion of homosexuality after that original date. Mm. And it wasn't till I went to America in 2009 when I came back from that trip. I was 19, and I finally actually came out to everyone.
Were you, and you went with this girl at the time?
I'd broken up with her a bit earlier than that.
Well, maybe let's touch on that one a bit more. I mean, you know, I mean, I think it's probably common for a lot of people to do something like that, though. Mm-hmm. That's a fairly considerable time. How did that go? I mean, did you kind of know that you weren't straight?
I knew the whole time. So imagine someone that you're not attracted to in any physical sense and forcing yourself to make out with this person and try and become a normal couple with this person. That was what it was like. I just remember every time we'd hold hands, I'd think, oh, this hand is clammy. Or every time we'd kiss, I'd be counting down the second until she'd open her eyes and I could separate. And this would happen night after night until finally we broke up one day. And it was such a relief to not have to fake that anymore.
Had she clued in?
I told her that I'd struggled with it in the past, so she just felt sorry for me. But she didn't see... Christians don't see homosexuality... Well, these days it's a bit different, but they don't see it as a state.
Well, worth noting, these of the community that you were a part of,
yes.
Well, most certainly.
A lot of traditional Christians have this mind... set, and they still do, and it's that homosexuality is a choice, or it's at least something that can be prayed away, or that God can help you through. And the fact is, with that mentality that I had myself as well, it wasn't me, it was something I was suffering from, like a sickness. So
wow. And that's what other people felt as well, that you had done that, maybe that you had fixed that you'd stopped.
Well, no
struggling.
One knew. It was only my mum and dad. And so it wasn't until I came out when I was 19 that anyone had an inkling of it. It was completely silenced.
How did that decision come about to come out?
Well, funny enough, being removed from a religious environment was what freed me. So I'd been in such a bubble for so long. When I went to America, I stayed with these atheist relatives that I have in Chicago, and they challenged everything that I thought about religion, and they didn't judge me based on how good of a Christian I was or anything. In fact, I started feeling good just being myself, and so I remember getting on the plane home and having this thought in my head, stupid thought, that if someone asks me, are you gay, I'm now going to say yes. And that was the turning point for me, as if someone would walk up to you out of the blue. But I decided I'd finally let that wall down, and that's when it all, yeah, a lot of walls came crashing down.
You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and we're talking to Sam, who was about to just tell us a little about, you came obviously from a very religious background.
That's right.
You know, when you were 19, went overseas, had a bit of a non-spiritual awakening in many senses, and then decided that you would tell people if you were gay when you'd been in denial for so long. When did you actually tell someone?
So I came home, and I remember messaging a friend and telling them and coming out to them, and they were so supportive. And in that stage, being the attention seeker that I am, I thought, oh, such a thrill telling each person when you come out. Every gay person knows this feeling of, it's almost like, you know, you're a jack in the box and you just think, oh yes, I can't wait to see their reaction. So when someone doesn't react, it's kind of a letdown. You think, oh, is that all? You're not gonna be excited or surprised or but
mad.
Most people, yeah, exactly, most people that I talked to, they reacted well, that were friends at least. But the church and my family reacted really badly.
Who did you come out to first?
So I decided with my family. At this time, my parents weren't very close, and they were basically on the verge of divorce. So I decided I'd come out individually to family members. So mm-hmm. I thought the first person I'm going to tell is mum, because we're so close, and big mistake. So I remember I went over to the house because I just moved out, and I was living with these two gay guys, actually. Well, one was gay, one was straight, and... it's my first experience with actual gay people, and I went back home and I was ready for this emotional experience where we'd hug each other and she'd be, that's all right, I love you. And instead I got this stone cold anger and resentment, and it was just a full wave of disappointment that I could be like that, almost as if she'd decided, well, I've failed as a mother. And it was just, I felt from that moment there was the complete wall where I felt no connection to my mother.
Wow.
And I was just bawling my eyes out.
And what about other members of your family?
Well, I told my brothers. So I told my little brothers, and they were, I mean, they were still mid-teens or early teens. So it was quite good for them. I think it was good that they were told. They were shocked, but because they were so young, they grew up with a more well-rounded mentality of what it was to be gay. Yeah. And so they suddenly would tell me little things like, oh, today the teacher said that no one should bag out homosexuality in front of him at a Christian school at all places. And they were so proud of him. And I thought, wow, it's having an impact on them. It's making them more well-rounded because their brother has this experience. They don't see it in a negative light anymore. My big brother, on the other hand, he lived in Melbourne, and I remember messaging him about it, and I got an okay with a full stop. And when he came up, I remember as soon as my parents left, things were really awkward. This was the most awkward Easter of my life. Everyone had gone off to the shops, and my brother was there, and he cornered me in the kitchen, and he slammed me up against the wall and said, how do you know that you're gay? Haven't you, without using the words, after a woman? How do you even know you're not straight? How do you know? And I remember saying to him, haven't you ever effed a dog? How do you know you don't like animals? And it was just the worst experience. I just got so angry at how ignorant that was. But the amount of people who still today have that mindset is just unbelievable. They only see it from their perspective. They don't understand it works two ways.
Of course. And did you then, how have those family relationships gone after that initial stage?
They're a lot better now. So I get along well with my brothers. My mum and me have never been very close since then. We still get along, but it's a lot shakier because she views her religion higher than my sexuality. So I don't really have control over that. But my dad's okay with it. And I mean, they've met previous boyfriends and they've come a long way, that's for sure. So yeah. I can at least bring a boyfriend to a family event without any kind of drama. And that was a big change for them.
Mm.
Did you ever have like actual discussions about it, or was it just you came out and then that was kind of the end of the story?
There are a lot of discussions. I had this mentality, and I think I would advise a lot of people this in a similar situation, is bring it up, because you don't know what's going on in their head. When there's silence, it's because they have unanswered questions. So when there was silence, I would say, what is it that you are thinking? What do you want to know? And they would say things like, well, does that mean you're going to go out and get HIV now? Or does that mean that now you're not a Christian? And so they'd have these irrational thoughts in their head that you can calm. Just like with any major change in someone's life, you've got to realize you're not the only one changing. And whilst, yes, they should accept you, it's a big change for them as well. And so being a bit selfless in those situations will actually end up helping you more.
Yeah. Education for parents, I think, is definitely very important in the coming out process, especially in Christian families.
Oh, 100%. Definitely.
Well, it's why we have shows like Stand Up Straight, the show before us.
Definitely.
It's for that exact kind of purpose. And it's worth noting that so much of it is, we have so much crossover actually with them for that exact same reason, because so much of our audience, of course, is a non-GLBTI audience, but who, you know, maybe wants to know a bit more, and especially that dual life that sometimes starts to pop up. And we don't have too much time left with you, but afterwards, did you still feel like you were a Christian and that sort of thing? And
well, basically at that point, that's when everything sort of moved away from Christianity. So I came out to the worship team, or the worship leader, who we were so close, had been in that team for years, like I was saying. And about 2 months later, she took me out for coffee and told me she'd been praying about it, and she thinks that because I was consciously sinning, that I should step down from the worship team.
Oh,
and wow. A lot of people left the worship team when I was dismissed from it because they were so angry, and there were a lot of people that I just stopped talking to because they didn't want to have anything to do with me. basically, I suddenly went from being part of the central team of the church, talking to the pastor and the other leaders, to being an outsider and understanding what people feel like when they say the church subjects them to isolation or feeling like they're exiled.
Wow.
And so did you ended up leaving and
I kind of lingered there because part of me felt like I needed their approval, and so I would go back and I would feel guilty if I didn't go to church on a Sunday, having gone for so long. When I eventually moved to Melbourne, I tried some gay churches and I felt like it just got worse because I was trying to find healing, but these gay churches were small and they would lean on me. I'd have I went to this little church that I won't name, but the pastor would lean on me and the members would lean on me, and I ended up being thrust into leadership again and run this, and I'd have people crying on my shoulder, and I just felt so drained that by the end of it, I just had such a bad taste in my mouth towards Christianity.
Well, yeah, you need the chance to heal for sure.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, of course, as well. And I'm sure anyone that listening, you know, it's a shame that, you know, I mean, you put in an honest effort to try and connect somewhere else with a place that was friendly, and it wasn't, unfortunately, what you were looking for.
Yeah, well, it's that moment of realization that, you know what, I need to stop looking because I've got it inside me already, and that's when I started really moving out of any kind of depressive state. I started feeling stronger as a person. And when I moved away from these churches and relying on my faith, which was what was making me guilty my whole life, I started feeling good about myself. And I realized that there wasn't a single Christian person who really was lifting me up. Regardless of how nice they are and if I'm still friends with them, I am much better off now as an agnostic person. I just feel like Christianity doesn't really have a place for, this is my thoughts, but homosexuality and Christianity just don't mesh, because Christianity was set up and has been running through a straight mindset, and no matter how progressive they get, unfortunately, it's always going to be an outsider thing trying to push in.
Now, Rachel, obviously you would probably feel a little bit differently. I mean, you're still someone who would, I know you're still feeling like you're still looking around here a bit here in Melbourne, but yeah, you come from a religious family yourself.
Definitely. So but my coming out story was like a little bit different. I did feel excluded at the church that I had grown up in, and I did the church shopping thing. I went to a church with a really good friend from school, which they surrounded me one night and literally just put their hands on me all at the same time and started praying, and I was like, hey, I didn't ask for this, I'm not cool with that, and left that church and, you know, did the whole thing. And it wasn't until I got to Sydney that I found a church that I felt like I belonged in, and then I moved to Melbourne, and then I was a bit uneasy here. So I feel like I've got it inside, that's all I need, I know God knows me, we're cool.
Yeah, okay, interesting. So, but I mean, you obviously, It's when you obviously feel then that it's not then, for you at least, not that you don't have to, let's say, relinquish your Christianity or something like that.
No. I think my dad was very helpful. My dad's a minister, and by him, the words that he said to me when I came out was, God loves you and I love you, and that's all that matters. And so I've had a lot of processing time over the years to see what the Bible actually does say around homosexuality meshed in with Christianity. I've spoken to a lot of pastors, I've spoken to a lot of people, and there is becoming to be a broader understanding within the Christian community about the LGBTI community, and that, you know, the Bible has to be taken in context. So some of those old-fashioned ideas should have been left at the door, and you need to, yeah.
But it sounds like that then, for some people at least, even if that's the aim, and we have these friendly churches, they are friendly, but they're not necessarily they haven't always, you know, they're still,
that's right,
letting people fall through the cracks, and they're not, people feel like, obviously you felt like that one in particular at least, it didn't do that job it was supposed to do
for
you.
Quite a few. I mean, I got to the point where I realized, why am I fighting to be accepted by something that I don't need to be approved by? I don't need to prove myself to anyone. And the problem with growing up in a church is you crave that community, you crave that sense of belonging, and having a church to go to is a sense of community. And so as soon as I was able to get past and develop my own networks outside of religion, I realized that it was really something I relied on unhealthily. So yeah, and also I noticed that whilst they may say they're accepting, it's more like, oh, you're a sinner, but we believe that God is the only one who can judge, so you're free to worship here. And
you certainly have those.
Yes,
definitely. So I think everyone needs to be a bit watchful when they're looking for a place that's friendly. There's friendly and there's
inclusive.
Then there's what do you call it? There's inclusive and there's tolerant.
Yes, exactly.
And hopefully you find a place that is inclusive and not tolerant, because I'm sure that's quite a sting if you come across that one. But it's interesting that you say it. So probably so many people with any religious community, it's why I think sometimes look a bit shocked why there are atheist churches around the world. And sometimes people say, well, that doesn't even make sense. But so many people forget, so many people are in religion, even if they don't believe in God, or even if they are really saying to myself, I really don't believe in God. So many people are there because of community.
Exactly.
Because it's their community and this. And I think we would say to anyone who's listening and to anyone here, the most important thing is that someone can find a community, and whether or not that be within a religious organization or outside of it, whatever it takes in order to find that community,
exactly.
The most important thing is that they find it.
I would agree. I would say if I could go back to my, 16-year-old self, I'd say you don't need to fit in. If people don't accept you as you are, then you're in the wrong place. Basically, regardless of whether you want to be religious or not, don't ever let anyone make you feel like you aren't as important as them, because there are a lot of people out there who will try and tell you that you're sinful or you're a bit different or odd or less, and you need to know that that is the opposite. In fact, you're just as important as anyone else out there, and you need to stand up for yourself.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show with us, Sam. It's been absolutely wonderful. It's nice to have someone who's come and willing to share a lot of things, fairly personal things, I'm sure very hurtful things. But thank you. Thank you so much for being on the Spirit Lounge, from both myself and Rachel.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, we have reached the end of another episode of the Spirit Lounge here on Joy 94.9. I think, Rachel, probably we want to, again say that thanks to Sam for being on the show. That was absolutely wonderful.
Definitely. It's so inspiring hearing other people's stories, and it just... it helps to know that you're not the only one, and I'm sure there are other people listening tonight that know exactly what Sam's been through and are feeling like they sit in that boat. So definitely want to reiterate what Tal said about finding a community that you do fit in, whether it be a religious community or not.
And so that's good night from Tal.
Good night from Rachel.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.